Quasi-Cerebral Talk and Tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, or the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded Coast Salish territories of the Catsey, Coquitlam, and Stolo First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and oh boy, is it just me, or is it time for a nap? Is it time to go to sleep? It is not even that late. It is Sunday afternoon during the time of recording. And I think I've been like sleeping pretty well lately. But I think it is the sudden change in weather that has been impacting me both emotionally and also like physically. I'm just like constantly tired, constantly like lethargic, very extremely sleepy. I'm a sleepy baby the past couple of days, and I kind of hate that, right? Because when you're tired, you become irritable and you're not even fully 100% on. And so you can be doing something, not fully engaged, you mess up, you're already kind of annoyed because you're tired, and now you lose your temper. That's kind of how I've been navigating the past couple of days, with this like sudden rainy spring weather. The other thing about it is that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a morning person, but compared to, I think, a lot of other people, I am pretty functional during the morning. I get up, I'm like alert, pretty alert, and I'm excited to get on with my day. Not in a positive way, but I know that I have to get on with my day, and so the gears just function, right? It is almost like in Castle in the Sky, when they find that like old dysfunctional robot and it awakens. It's kind of like that. That's kind of me. The mornings are the best time to like listen to bird song, for example, go out, look at some birds. And to like, if you got a busy packed day, you gotta wake up early so that you can finish things on time, so that you can take some of your evening off, right? So I don't hate the mornings, but I was thinking maybe that is the reason why that the past couple of days I have been so tired. What if there is some force in the universe that is making me repent, because the natural alignment of the cosmos dictates that actually the morning times are for tired times, right? And if you're not tired during first thing in the morning, then it's gonna come back at you later on in the morning, into the early afternoon, into the mid-afternoon, into the late afternoon, until you can't stand it anymore and you pass out right after dinner and you end up having sleep paralysis because you're so tired. Is that just a me thing? Who knows? Hey, anyways, today I've got an exciting show for you. I got to sit down and talk with Jordana George, who is the curator of an exhibition currently happening over at Bill Reed Gallery. The exhibition is called Khayyam, and it is about comics. If you've listened to the show over the course of the many years it has gone on, you know that I love a good comic. I love a good conversation about comics, and Jordana and I talk all about that and about what you can look forward to at the exhibition. And of course, they give some really cool recommendations, which is super exciting. So get into it. That's coming up real soon. On the playlist today, it's a short one. We are listening to some newly released CanCon that's mostly upbeat. We've got some Ginger Beef coming up in the hour. We'll be listening to some VanCon with Ecstasy. And first, here is Vancouver queer icon, the Golden Age of Wrestling, with Ferrari Rocher. Enjoy! Thank you.
is Bird Note. Birds like finches and cardinals love sunflower seeds, which they take into their stout triangular beaks one after the other. In the blink of an eye, they extract the nutritious contents, and they do it so fast it looks like a magician's sleight of hand. But if we magnify the process and slow it down, we can see how it works. First, if we look inside a finch's beak, we see a groove that runs the length of the beak on the cutting edge of the upper half. The lower half of the beak slides into it perfectly. When a finch plucks a sunflower seed from the feeder, it uses its tongue to maneuver the seed lengthwise into that groove. As it closes its beak, a slight back-and-forth action slices open the hull, and a small sideways movement husks the seed, while the tongue may help extract the kernel. Now it's quickly onto the next seed. Maneuver, slice, husk and extract, swallow. Chickadees lack the heavy-duty seed-slicing beak of a finch, but they still partake of countless sunflower seeds. A chickadee takes one sunflower seed at a time from the feeder, flies to a nearby perch where it can hold the seed atop a branch, then hammers and chips the hull open with the tip of the bill to extract the goods. In that amount of time, a hungry finch might easily open and consume half a dozen seeds. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. I'm sitting down with Jordana George, who is the guest curator of the current running exhibition at Bill Reed Art Gallery called Chayam. And it is such a pleasure to be able to talk today. Thank you so much for your time today, Jordana. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listener?
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name is Jordana George. I use they, them pronouns. I am from the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation, from Sooke, BC, on Vancouver Island. And I am living in Coquitlam on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam Nations. I've been here as a guest since 2021. And yeah, I curated the current exhibition Chayam at Bill Reed Gallery. And it's my first time curating. And yeah, I'm happy to talk about it.
That's awesome. What is Chayam about?
Yeah, so Chayam is a Sunchothan word, which is my dialect from the island. It means to tell stories. And I'm a comic artist by trade. And I've always had an interest in comics. And so the show is about Indigenous comics and Indigenous storytelling through comics as a medium. So I'm one of the artists featured in the show, along with four other comic artists from the West Coast. They all have different backgrounds, both from where on the coast they're from and also their experience and way that they utilize comics and how they interpret the word comics. So the other artists are Gord Hill, who is Kwikwakiwak, Michael Nikoyagalanis, who is Haida, Wes Harmon, who is Curier Wittat, and Cole Pauls, who is Taltan. So they all have worked in comics in different, I guess, capacities before, and I've been a fan of all of their work for years, so I was really excited to bring them all together for this exhibition.
It must have been so exciting to be able to put together that with so many people who have influenced your work and who are, I mean, in my opinion, like making really cool strides in the world of comics in general as well. We'll talk a little bit about, what their work looks like at the gallery in a little bit. But firstly, one of the things I was really interested in was that this exhibition is about comics by Indigenous artists. Of course, the core tenet of Bill Reed Art Gallery is to celebrate the artwork of Northwest Coast Indigenous artists, both in traditional art forms and modern ones. So already there you have a foundation that encourages art appreciators of all kinds to get into and appreciate comics by Indigenous storytellers. But in the larger art world, I find that comics, for the most part, and I would even make the suggestion that other visual art, such as illustration and design, they are not often considered like gallery worthy, in the sense that they don't fall under the meta category of fine art, and they're often still considered amateur or childish and overall in other elitist terms. Then of course there's the obvious colonialism and racism of museums and galleries in general, right? Like traditional art forms are not taken seriously despite the years of skill that it takes for artists to develop. And they're only really appreciated if they're like consumable, like touristy things, or if they can be frankly stolen and studied by white historians in museums of colonial powers. Can you talk to me a little bit more about the significance of exhibiting Indigenous comics in the current landscape of the art world?
Yeah, for sure. I agree that comics and illustration and graphic art is very seldom considered to be fine art or high art, in quotes, because most people, when they think of a comic book, they think of Superman, they think of Spider-Man, they think of like action heroes that traditionally have been marketed towards young boys and has sort of been brushed off as like cheap entertainment. But in reality, comics have such a long and fascinating history of serving not just children and not just boys, but people of all backgrounds, all ages, all genders, and a history of carrying content of all different types too, not just not even just fiction. Comics and zines as well have been used to distribute information during times of political oppression, to educate people who don't have access to higher levels of education, talking about things like safe sex, talking about things like feminism or civil rights. So, historically, they are a very powerful form of both art and literature. And I mean, today the field of graphic novels has become a lot more popular now because people are starting to see that it is a valid form of both art and literature because the genre can be anything and anyone can be creating or reading comics. They can be so refined just as much as they can be silly and fun. The content can be just as serious as it can be funny and lighthearted. So, it's such a broad medium and a broad industry, and that's part of why I like it so much. And I think what I want is for more people to realize that because, I mean, comics kind of changed my life in a way, and I was one of those people who grew up thinking comics were just superheroes and they were just meant for boys. Like, I shouldn't be reading them, they're not for me. But once I kind of had my eyes opened to what comics can be, and what they can do for us, I mean, here I am, a professional comic artist, and like it's how I'm making my living and it's how I express myself, it's how I connect with other people. So I want more people to have that realization so that more stories can be shared, more stories can be read, and this art form can get the appreciation that it deserves.
Yeah, I definitely hear you there, and I think I have myself personally, I have like a similar experience in that for a long time, like the traditional North American comic didn't really appeal to me until like I started to be able to access like these other forms of comics that were like much more expansive. And you're right, like one of the really interesting things about comics is that they are such powerful forms of communication. I think there's a video actually at the gallery in which Gord Hill talks about why he got into comics in the first place, and Gord Hill, for the listener who might not be familiar, he's one of the artists featured and wrote a number of graphic novels about, I guess, what you could call like somewhat heavy topics, right? They're about resistance against colonialism, capitalism. They are about political struggle. And he wanted to make those stories because he realized like not a lot of people want to like sit down and read like a 500-page history book. But if you can take all the main points and put that into a format that is engaging in both words and also in visuals, you might be able to get folks to think a little bit differently about important things in the world, such as history and the things that impact us. And I almost wonder when you mention like how comics and zines, for example, have informed people, and that's why they're so valuable. Part of me actually also wonders, like, if maybe one of the reasons why comics might not be seen as super valuable by the larger art world is because of who, I guess, those publications are informing. Right, like the discussions that they're having, topics about, you know, as you say, like safe sex, feminism, environmentalism, and that type of thing. Yeah, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally possible that that is like a subconscious influence on people in the fine arts world who maybe look down on zines and comics, especially because zines especially, they're meant to be produced at a low cost and given away at a low cost or given away for free because their primary function historically is to be accessible to people of lower income and of lower education levels. And so that often includes people of color. It includes poor people, disabled people, sex workers. And so those people are often also excluded from the fine high art worlds, which is, as we know, full of elitism, full of colonialism, full of white supremacy, even when those things are subconscious on the parts of curators or museum directors, they are very present. And those of us from marginalized backgrounds do very much notice them. So, yeah, it just felt really special to have something in the Bill Reid Gallery, which is a very well-respected gallery in Vancouver, and to showcase these things that, yeah, maybe not always, but sometimes produced at a lower budget and not aimed at wealthy white tourists, but are put on the same level as like any famous painting or sculpture you might see. And yes, they're just drawn on a piece of paper with pen, but the artists who drew them have so many years of practice and skill and insight that they put into their work. And I just wanted to showcase the value of that.
Thank you. I'll move on to the next question. So comics, and I guess it kind of like echoes a little bit about what we were talking earlier about like traditional comics. Well, the work that's featured in the exhibition, the way that the comics take form are displayed in various ways, and the explainer at, I think it's, I don't know what it's called, but like the description of the exhibition.
The curatorial statement.
Thank you. Yes, the curatorial statement notes that the featured artwork comes in traditional and digital styles, and I think that the visitor might actually be surprised to see that even within those styles, the way that the stories are being told may not necessarily be one how conventionally thinks of comics. Echoing, like, in the sense of what you mentioned before, like, those superhero comics. But rather, you know, there are zines in there. I think there's one by Gord Hill that you can literally take home. Your zines are in there as well. There is I guess, like, in my mind, I would call kind of like a painting, but really is a comic by Michael. And then there's, of course, the blanket created by Wes. Can you talk a little bit about the subversion of the traditional comic as seen in the exhibition?
Yeah, totally. So one thing I liked about this collection of artists is that they all have really different ways of working, not only in the types of stories they tell and their genre, but how they approach comics as a medium. So like you said, most of the works are on paper. Some of them are drawn with pen on paper. Some of them are prints of digital art. But Wes's work just really stood out to me, and I was so glad that he decided to have this be his submission to the exhibition because it's a textile work. And yeah, I also think of it as a blanket, which I think is so fascinating because blankets are so important in Northwest Coast culture. It, of course, varies from nation to nation, but they're seen as signs of wealth, signs of nobility. They're used as, like, protection, spiritual protection. So I just thought that was so on point with what I wanted the exhibition to communicate. But it isn't what people think of as comics because, I mean, it's fabric. We don't think of comics as being on fabric. We think of it as either on paper or on a screen. But there is a graphic element to it with the figures and the text that are on the fabric. And they are telling a story that is elaborated on in Wes's artist statement on the wall. So, yeah, I was really glad that that was able to kind of trigger people to think more deeply about what is a comic, what can a comic be. And yeah, just think more about how we conceptualize these visual narrative stories. They're not always scene A, scene B, scene C. Sometimes they're more sort of circular than that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to form my words. Yeah, the blanket really stood out to me. I think because it's like, as you say, it's a multimedia work. It's not just like pen on paper. I don't know. Sometimes I think about it, and I still have to, like, take a moment to process it because it was really cool to see. Okay, before I get lost in that, let's move on. Anyways, one of the highlights, definitely go check that out if you're going to check out Hoyam. That's what our conversation right now with the guest curator at Bill Reed Art Gallery, Jordana George, is about. We are talking about Hoyam, the exhibition, about comics. One of the things that I felt like was a through line at the exhibition was this feeling of encouragement for folks, particularly like Indigenous youth, to get into comic making. And there's even an activity at the exhibition for folks to make comics of their own. Can you tell me a bit more about this as the curator and as a comics creator?
Yeah. So I really wanted this exhibition to not just be seen. I didn't want visitors to see these comics as something behind glass. Because, I mean, it's a gallery, you're obviously not supposed to touch the things on the walls. But comics are meant to be read, they're meant to be handled. And so I really wanted to have a reading table. And so there is a table at kind of the end of the hallway that has books, not just from the artists in the exhibition, but from all different Indigenous comic writers and artists that visitors can spend some time with and read. You can sit down instead of standing up and staring at a piece on the wall. You can kind of take your time with the different stories, let them ruminate, form a relationship with them. And the part where visitors can draw a panel of their own comic and it can be placed on the wall, I don't want to take credit for that because it actually wasn't my idea. It was done by the education specialist at the gallery, Sarah, who was amazing. So there are large pieces of paper with panels of different shapes pre-drawn on them, and people are welcome to add a panel or two of anything they want. And Sarah's been putting them up on the wall. And I was so happy and surprised when I visited one day to see that because one of my main hopes with this exhibition was that people would grow an interest in comics and read more of them. So to see people not only reading them, but actually drawing them too, especially people that aren't artists themselves, was just really like fulfilling and exciting for me. And they also do school programs, school tours at the gallery. So across the wall from the larger tapestries, I guess, that people can make are smaller comics that students have made to sort of reflect on what they saw and learned at the gallery. And they're all different ages. So there's some from really young kids that are really cute and insightful. So that's actually one of my favorite parts of the exhibition, and I didn't even do it. So I'm just really glad that that came to be and that it's been well received and people have been interacting with it.
Awesome. Yeah, shout out to Sarah then for doing that. I really enjoyed looking through those because it felt like you could see kind of like what each visitor who participated, where they were kind of like at in that part of their their life, I guess, and like it captured, I don't know, some like cool creative energy there. As we're kind of like starting to wrap up our discussion today. It's a pretty short one, but you know, we really want you to actually go and see the exhibition yourself. You, the listener. Jordana, what are the biggest influences in your practice and your biggest comic influences? And what do you hope Khayyam inspires in visitors to the exhibition? I think we touched on that a little bit, but if you could talk even more about that.
So whenever people ask me what my influences are, it's such a huge question because I'm influenced by everything around me, by every piece of media that I take in. So not just comics, but every movie I watch, every album I listen to, seeing like fashion on Instagram, it all inspires me and my art. But I did prepare like a small list of comic artists just to be a little more prepared for this question. Obviously, the artists in the exhibition, Cole and Wes and Gord and Michael, have all been huge inspirations to me, which kind of maybe goes without saying. But I'm really influenced as well by manga artists, which for any listeners who aren't familiar, manga is Japanese comics. And that's actually what got me into comics, was that format, specifically the shoujo genre, so the genre targeted at like teen girls. So Ryukyu Kui, Kamome Shirahama, Rumiko Takahashi, those are some of my favorite manga artists, Hayao Miyazaki. I've also been really influenced by honestly a lot of female comic artists, Jillian Tamaki and Emily Carroll, who are both Canadian as well, Kiku Hughes, Sam Beck, Jamie McKelvey, Rosemary Valero O'Connell, as well as tons of authors of like novels as well, which I could talk about forever, so I won't go there. But yeah, I'm hoping that this exhibition drives more people to read comics in general, but especially to seek out work by Indigenous creators and creators of color in general, queer comic artists, just people who have been pushed to the margins for a really long time and have really unique stories to tell. I hope visitors seek those things out and just sort of incorporate them into their daily reading and their daily reflections on what a comic is and what art is.
Can I like expand on this mini subject a little bit?
Yeah.
The listener can't see, but I like when you were talking about manga and a lot of the female comic artists that you were mentioning, like it's like I'm kind of losing it a little bit because like yes, like oh that is I really see myself in that experience as well. Are you watching Delicious in Dungeon right now?
It's my favorite show
Yeah.
and my
It's
favorite manga.
it is so good. Delicious in Dungeon, for the listener who doesn't know, is a manga series written by Ryoko Kui. And it is currently being streamed, I guess, on Netflix with its anime adaptation. I really maybe I really gotta tone it down here, but like, oh, those character designs are so good.
They're so good.
They're really great. And if you could recommend like maybe like five of the things of the comics that you think folks can pick up to like kind of get started if they're not really into comics, or even if you're just like, if you don't know about it, please do yourself a favor. Like, what are those five?
Oh man. I feel like it's hard to say just because there are so many different genres and everyone's so different about what is going to stick with them. Looking at my bookshelf. One, I would say Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. That's a graphic novel series. It is kind of explicit. It has like nudity and swearing and violence, so definitely for an adult audience. But that's one of my favorites that got me really into Western graphic novels, especially long form ones. It's so hard to narrow it down. I would say maybe Cole Pauls actually has a great graphic novel called Quandor that just came out a couple years ago, and it's a collection of his short stories. So you get a great like sampling of his work in this one book. I would really recommend that. I mean, I'll say Delicious in Dungeon because that's one of my favorite manga ever. It's a if anyone is familiar with Dungeons and Dragons, it's kind of in that vein, but it's more focused on cooking and eating the monsters in the dungeon. But it's actually surprisingly insightful and touching and funny. So it's one of my faves. Specifically, this is the horror genre, but anything by Emily Carroll, a good start would be Through the Woods, because that's also an anthology. I think it's four or five of her stories. She is such a unique, beautiful graphic art style. And she's a great storyteller as well. How many is that for?
You can keep going. That's fine. We've got time.
Okay. I would say maybe I'll say another artist from the show, Gord Hill. The first book of his that I read is 500 Years of Resistance. So that's sort of a history of Indigenous people in, I think it's mostly in North America, but I think South America too. Indigenous people's resistance to colonialism over the past 500 years. And I think just a couple years ago, he came out with an expanded version, which I have yet to read. So the original's in black and white, but the expanded is in color, and it has a lot more information that he added in, as well as some revisions. So definitely recommend that, both for getting into comics and for getting into Indigenous history and anarchy. I could go on forever, so I'll stop it. Fine.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's a great list. Those are some wonderful works, and a few of them I haven't heard of. So I'll definitely have to go check that out as well. But yeah, as we're coming up to a close here, as kind of like the person of the hour on the show today, tell us a little bit about what you're currently working on and how people can get into your work and follow it and support it.
For sure. So right now I'm working on my first graphic novel myself. It's going to be coming out in 2026 from Conundrum Press. It's called Firewall. I'm calling it an Indigenous cyberpunk or an Indigipunk. So it's kind of a future low sci-fi focused on Indigenous characters and Indigenous issues. Working on that right now. Vancouver Comics Festival is coming up this May. It's May 18th to 19th, and I'll be both a vendor and a panelist at that. So if you have any interest in comics whatsoever, it's at the Roundhouse. It's free admission. Definitely come check it out. It's always a great time. What else am I doing? I'm always like cooking up new ideas. It's just finding the time to actually do them. But yeah, if people want to find me, my website is jordanageorge.com. And I'm also active on social media, which is linked on there. And yeah, that's me at the moment.
Cool. Thank you so much, Jordana. You can find their website on Google, and also it'll be linked on the archived episode of this episode of Typically Tuesdays when it goes up later on this week. And of course, don't forget to go check out Hoyam. Hoyam. Thank you. Don't forget to go check out Hoyam. It is currently continuing to run over at Bill Reed Gallery in Vancouver. It will be there until May 19th. Get into it. It is an incredibly fun time, and everything is just extremely gorgeous. You don't want to miss this. Go check it out from now until May 19th. Thank you so much, Jordana.
Yeah, thank you. High school.
La prairie, sans regret, sans peur et sans souci.
This is Bird Note. Sam Ohugan is the senior scientist and cultural advisor for the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii. And he's quick to tell you about how special Hawaii's ecology is.
Hawaii is an amazing place because it's a microcosm of the world. In one limited area, you have a huge number of the major biome types of the entire globe. And you can find an environmental setting in Hawaii that can support just about every living plant species.
With invasive species and climate change, Hawaii has experienced so much loss and extinction since Western colonists arrived. But Sam, who is Native Hawaiian, has done a lot of work connecting Hawaiian culture and tradition to conservation ecology.
The best managed and preserved areas on Earth that remain are ones that largely retain their indigenous relationships. It's a movement that's growing, and Hawaii is kind of leading the way in that. There is growing recognition that traditional knowledge is a vital part of long-term conservation success.
Sam hopes that one day, Hawaii can be not just a microcosm of ecology, but of conservation as well.
We get to be the example of what can happen in a place if you can work the right combination of people and the natural world. People living in a place, caring for their lands from the top of the mountains above them all the way down into the depths of the sea.
For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. You just heard Andrina Tolen with Je Suis Al Bill, new music from her. My name is Leslie, and I hope you enjoyed my conversation today with Jordana George. It's always just so fun to talk with other comics lovers about comics. But like, and listen, I'm not trying to shade any amateurs here. But like, it's also really super cool to talk to comics professionals about comics, because it's just like, to know from where they get their influence, how they're going to use this art form and storytelling form to contribute to wider discussions about the world and contribute to fiction, and to inform and educate people, to also like kind of like chat with them about great comics. Always just like so fulfilling to me. And so I'm just really grateful for Jordana's time and energy, and I'm really grateful to you for listening to today's program, for making Typically Tuesdays your choice, to for choosing to spend an hour listening to Typically Tuesdays today. Remember, you can go check out Hoyam up until May 19th. That's actually Van Calf weekend. You know, again, like, more comics, of course, we love. But yeah, go check it out. And if you want to talk about comics, hit me up over on Instagram. You know, I love talking about that stuff. I am at Typically Tuesdays. If you don't have Instagram, hit me up over on email, typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. Tell me about what you're reading, what you've enjoyed. Tell me about your experience at Hoyam. We are hitting the top of the hour here on the show today. Thank you for listening. I've been plugging Democracy Now! Endlessly for so long, Monday to Friday, 11 to 12, get your source of progressive news here on 90.1 FM or cjsf.ca during that hour. And for your music fix, I mean, like, obviously listen to any of the open mic shows here on 90.1 FM. We're on like literally at so many hours during the week. One that I would really recommend you check out is Daniel's open mic. every Monday from 2 to 3, right before typically Tuesdays. Daniel has great taste in music, first of all, obviously. And also, I've been listening to his show whenever I am able to catch it, or if I like sometimes like might stumble upon it if it has changed its hour. And I've been hearing him on air since, I think, August last year. He's an excellent host, and so excited to facilitate your music listening experience. So go check out his show. Mondays from 2 to 3, that's Open Mic with Daniel, right before Typically Tuesdays. All right. Thank you so much for tuning into the show today. One last track. This song must have been one that I heard on CJSF the very first time I listened to it, because it sounds super familiar, but when I looked it up on my music streaming platform, I couldn't find any history of me ever listening to it, even though it is such a banger. Sometimes we love sad boy yearny music here on the program. One last track today here on Typically Tuesdays. I've been Leslie. I hope you enjoy. This is Bella by Ecstasy. I'll see you next week.